In this episode, we get to speak with entrepreneur, developer, and director Shane Thomas.
And we find out how a failed high school class drop attempt turned into a career of educating and inspiring.
Thunder! 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 Thunder!
Welcome to the Thunder Nerds, where we always remember to battle our sensei. I am now and forever JD Wright.
And I am Frederick Philip Von Weiss. You are listening to the Thunder Nerds, a conversation with the people behind the technology that love what they do and do web good.
Rex Quando.
Am I voting for Pedro? What's going on?
Bow to your sensei. Bow to your sensei!
Rex Quando.
Ah, Rex Quando, that's right. Man, you don't want a dropkick from a dude wearing pants like this. That's all I'm saying.
No, you don't want to go home to Brenda or whatever her name was.
I think it was Brenda too. Yeah,
I don't know.
Fuck, I need some of those pants. Those are pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess speaking of senseis and things of that nature in karate, and I think we'll bring up code karate in a little bit. That's the tie-in. Well, let's go ahead and welcome our guest. We have entrepreneur, developer, and director Shane Thomas. Welcome, sir.
Thanks, guys. It's good to be here.
Yeah, great to have you, Shane.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Man, we're super excited to have you. I mean, when I first started coming up in the Drupal world, I watched a lot of your videos on things like trying to get relationships in between views, like going into views and adding the relationship and then kind of crossing over certain things. And it's cool to have like a full circle and have you on the show and talking about some of the stuff with us. Just to get a little bit of context, and we'll kind of start from the beginning and work our way into Drupal. So let's talk a little bit about you and how you got to where you are currently. You're in the South Dakota area, is that correct?
Yes, I am from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So born and raised here, been here my whole life. Yeah, I love the Midwest, so.
For a very hot minute, I used to live in Woonsocket, South Dakota.
Really? I bet there's a story behind that.
Yeah, yeah. not a huge story, to be honest with you. It was just, I just remembered it because of the word Woonsocket and the fact that there was like one stoplight, maybe.
That sounds probably about right. Stoplight. Yeah, that sounds about
how,
right.
How big is your city? Is it actually like a town?
Yeah,
town, like
yeah.
John's talking about, or you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Sioux Falls is the biggest city in South Dakota. So we're in the metro area. It's about 250,000. So not huge, but for South Dakota, it's pretty big.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
It's interesting for probably our industry and maybe not in the past, but for our industry and currently, you could pretty much live anywhere and do what we do. I have buddies that work in Egypt that just work there just because they can. Because why? Why not? You know, it doesn't matter. So you could do whatever you want to do anywhere you want to do it. And you could just work remote. You could work for somebody in that city or work for yourself in that city. And I know you're doing a lot of things where you started a lot of companies, and you're probably doing a lot for your local community.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. The web definitely tears down the barriers, so it's good that you can kind of work from wherever you see fit on a lot of this stuff. So,
yeah. Did you go to a university there as well?
Yeah, not in Sioux Falls, but I went to Dakota State University. It's a smaller state, you know, college, but it's known for its technology, so it really kind of fit well. So a lot of people from the Midwest travel up to Madison, South Dakota, which is only about a 45-minute drive from Sioux Falls. So it worked out really well for kind of what I was passionate about, and yeah, it was a good school.
Where did you get that passion? What drove you to development?
You know, that's a funny story. So in high school, I took a programming class. I just always had an interest in computers. You know, always thought it was something that I would be interested in doing. So I thought, why not try a programming class? It was Java programming. It was my first introduction that I ever had really seen with code. And after the first semester of the class, I tried to drop out. Basically trying to get out of the second semester. I didn't think it was for me. I didn't like it. It was hard, as you can imagine. You know, you guys all have looked at code.
Java's not the easiest thing to learn.
Exactly. It was definitely not an easy, you know, it wasn't easy for me, and I was a relatively good student, so it was kind of hard, but I wanted to swallow my pride and say, it wasn't for me, let's try something else. But the school actually blocked it because the second semester was an AP class, so it was for college credit, so they wouldn't let you drop out of it for what I was trying to convince them was a good idea and let me take a gym class. So second semester, and I was one of only a handful of the students to actually pass the AP test, so it actually worked out really well. It kind of ignited my passion. Once I kind of got through the initial roadblocks, it was all kind of, you know, that's all she wrote from there, if that makes sense. It really kind of got that passion going. So I can definitely thank my high school for that, for not letting me do what I thought at the time was a really good idea.
Where did it go from Java?
Well, you know, I majored in computer information systems, which is kind of a mix between computer science and a business degree. So it kind of fits into both worlds. You take a mixture of business classes, you take a mixture of computer science classes. You don't quite get the math that the computer science degree gets, which is a little unfortunate, but it was still a really good mix for the stuff that I was interested in. And so I got some experience with a lot of, you know, C#, ASP.NET as well. And that really led into my first internship, which I was actually a software engineering intern at Eros Data Center, which is deals with geological mapping and all types of government related data regarding just geological data. And so I used Java there pretty heavily kind of throughout my internship, and then eventually transitioned and was introduced to PHP.
That's a natural progression, I think, for a few people, maybe a lot of people. So what kind of things did you do in PHP?
To some extent. I kind of just was working on a bunch of internal websites at the time for the Eros Data Center. And I did a little bit of freelance work outside of there. And eventually graduated college and transitioned out of Eros Data Center and started working for a financial institution, a credit card processing company, as a developer there. And I was doing much more C# and ASP.NET.
Nice.
And just actually some old school ASP as well. But after, I still had that, you know, knowledge of PHP. I still did a little bit of freelance work here and there. And that's kind of when I transitioned into, you know, becoming an entrepreneur, so to speak. And then that's when PHP really took over for me.
I guess once you kind of learn something like Java, the other languages are a lot easier in your eyes after that, and especially PHP. Not a lot has changed. Maybe a little bit has changed technically of what you could do with PHP from, I don't know, from where it was to 7, but it's more about performance, I think, but all the kind of fundamentals are still there. So how did you go from that point to become an entrepreneur? Because you co-founded a lot of different companies, and I might not say this right, but it's how do you say it, Jonathan? What was it? What software?
Well, wait, which one are you talking about?
The first one. It's Kaliki. Is that it?
Kaliki.
Yeah.
Kaliki. Is that right, Shane?
You got it. Yeah. Yeah.
Jonathan got it. I couldn't say it. So Kaliki, and then beginner. And then you started Learn, Create, Build Academy. Like, you've co-founded a lot of different companies. What gave you the what started burning the entrepreneur fire in you? And how did you go from just being a developer to becoming an entrepreneur? Started creating these companies.
Yeah, well, when I was growing up, I spent a lot of time with my grandfather, who was a He ran a small business. He was he was a plumber, and I always saw how hard he worked, and I guess I saw some of the rewards for all the hard work that he put in. And so I think early on, I kind of always had that idea that, you know, maybe someday I would start a business too. And I never knew, of course, what it would be.
Sure.
But as I started kind of developing my skills, I had a roommate in college who was actually a friend of mine from all the way growing up from elementary school, who also had similar interests in business. He had a business and accounting degree. So it really worked out well with my web skills and his business skills. And we just started talking about it, and we kind of dabbled with some ideas throughout college. But once we were out of college for, you know, a year or so out of college, we decided, why not just try it? So we had another person we had known from school who knew a little bit more about servers and back-end. And we just kind of took the leap. We decided to start building websites. We, you know, did the whole cold calling and trying to find just customers, and started Kalicki Software in 2009. And that really kind of was the jumping off point for, you know, my entrepreneurial journey, and kind of realizing that it wasn't as easy as it maybe sometimes it seems. It definitely has always been a big challenge. But once we got going with kind of our first clients, our first big projects, things started taking off. We hired a few kind of part-time employees from the college that we actually had graduated from. We were growing pretty well. And then my partner Adam and I, we decided to kind of branch off from the other partner we had brought in originally. We just didn't always agree on exactly the direction, as you can imagine when you get people who, you know, there's a lot of tension when you're strong personalities, tension when you're trying to pay the bills, you're struggling to make money. So that's when we transitioned from Kalicki Software to Beginner Media. It was basically similar ideas, similar concepts. We thought the name could use a change anyways. As you struggled to say it at the beginning or a few minutes ago, it kind of brings back chuckles and memories, because that was one of the reasons, you know, for the change. Yeah. Is just, you know, a little bit more confusing. Not that the next one was that much better, but it definitely was a little bit.
Yeah, I looked at it and I didn't get it. I thought it was German at first, and then Jonathan was like, "No,
I one-shotted it the times." So I was like, oh, "This is like, because Kalicki just made me think of Christmas song, the Hawaiian Christmas song from
Vacation movies,
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation." Yeah, it's like Mellow Kalicki Maka. I was like Kalicki. Okay, I get Kalicki. And the other one was just
Beginner without the E.
Yeah.
Yep. Beginner. So it's just begin with the letter R at the end. Yeah. That was just a play on we could get the domain name. So that's kind of why we ended up going with that name. It was a short domain name, but we've realized it's really difficult when you have to tell people how to type, how to spell things. So that we learned that a lot in the first few years.
A lot of times too, people don't find you by going to, well, at least in nowadays, people aren't finding you by literally going and typing into their location bar and typing in a website. It's usually finding something through Google, social media, or, you know, I saw something on, I don't know, Snapchat, and somebody recommended this company. So it's not always about going to a URL that you heard of. So I don't know how relevant that is these days, to where you have a name that you have to know exactly how to spell.
Right, yeah, I agree with that.
So what is StemFuse?
All right, so this was kind of a transition for us. As, you know, we had Beginner Media that was going well. We really transitioned into e-commerce. We worked on some really really big e-commerce sites for some, you know, major sports organizations, always as kind of third-party contractors, never the kind of the head of the project, but we worked on some really really big sites, had some really good success there, and of course worked on small mom and pops sites that most website development companies work on as well. But then we actually had started working with a company called StemFuse, and this is where I really started getting into the education vertical that I'm in today, because they're a curriculum development company that develops K-12 curriculum, mainly for middle schools and high schools, but curriculum based on game design, mobile app design, website design, and that kind of thing. All technology-based, STEM, if you're familiar with that, science, technology, engineering, and math. So they build STEM curriculum and distribute it and sell it to schools throughout the United States. I think they're in a couple thousand schools, 2,000 or 3,000 last time, you know, when I was part of the company. But we actually were their kind of development contractor for a lot of their curriculum and a lot of their websites and any of their technology projects. And eventually, as you know, they received funding and were growing, they needed the dedicated technology in-house. So Beginner Media, in essence, merged with StemFuse about 2013, if I remember right. And we kind of came on as part owners of the company and helped develop StemFuse, you know, from when we started about 1,000 schools to get them into, I think they're probably around 3,000 today. And we were there until August of 2015.
This sounds like it was really encompassing. Like, with this kind of immersion, did you not have any extra time for beginner? Was it just
yeah,
this?
It was, yeah, basically we went in, we did this full time. This was our full time job. Beginner media kind of, I guess it's kind of an, in the entrepreneurial world, they sometimes call it an acqui-hire, I guess, you know. So where basically beginner media wasn't bought. It was more or less all my employees. We had two employees at the time. It was my business partner, Adam, and I completely went and became full-time employees at StemFuse. And Adam and I also had equity in the company.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So not an acquisition, but an acqui-hire. I haven't heard that one before, but I totally get where you're going with that. That makes sense.
Right. And so...
Wow, that's so interesting. What a interesting time in your life.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. But it kind of really, it made sense because we had the technology skills, but I always had kind of the itch for educating or teaching people. And so it really fit with what I wanted to do. It really fit with what we thought was best for the company. The company was doing well, but not so well that, you know, we wanted to turn down an opportunity like this with a high growth company that... definitely could use, you know, the skills that we had.
If anything, it's great alignment for your career path to say that you've done something like this. And also, too, like you said, this is really somewhere you wanted to go in your career, educating people. And it kind of makes sense from somebody on the outside as myself looking into what you're talking about and where you wanted to go with your career. And I guess, so from that, how did you go to another company, the latest company that you have, that you co-founded, which is Learn, Create, Build Academy?
Yeah, so when we started at StemFuse in, I want to say it was August of 2013. So I was at StemFuse for 2 years. And during that time, I guess you could say I was, you know, we weren't really big on titles, but I was the CTO. It was 11, 12 people, you know, at the max when I was there. Mostly sales, but also myself, my business partner, Adam, and the two employees that we brought along running the whole development side of things. And we built a few platforms, mainly using Drupal, a few mobile apps for the company. We helped develop and push for the web curriculum that they are using, which is all based on Drupal. So there's a few hundred schools now teaching a Drupal-based web curriculum, a few hundred high schools throughout the United States. That we developed while we were there. We also developed a mobile app design curriculum, improved the game design curriculum that they already had. So we really kind of got our curriculum development chops at the time. But one of the things we always kept running into is we'd build something and then we'd kind of let it go. And the teachers we never really got direct interaction with the teachers or never actually got to see it being taught. And so one of the things we wanted to do is we actually wanted to see firsthand kind of the learning that the kids were actually being able to experience and seeing if it works. And so we kind of ran a small test pilot while we were at the company just to try out a summer camp program where we actually, you know, my business partner Adam and I actually taught the summer camp, and we got to see firsthand. And that kind of flipped the switch for us where we became and realized we were becoming passionate about actually seeing the change in the kids throughout, you know, direct teaching them these technology skills. And that's when we decided, you know, we kind of helped StemFuse grow. We got it to a point where we thought, you know, it was a good time for us to walk away. They were really focused on the curriculum side of things and selling into schools, which is a very difficult process to do. It's never easy to incite change in schools. It's just kind of a hard sell. And so as they were continuing to grow, and you know, the technology was to a point where we thought it was way above where we came in at, and way above what, you know, StemFuse needed to continue growing. I guess we just stepped away. We saw the opportunity and we decided we want to teach technology skills directly to kids, not in the school system, but outside of the school system as a separate entity, teaching summer camps, weekend camps, online classes, that kind of thing. And so that's when we, you know, in 2015 in August, decided let's go ahead and do this. Let's kind of take the leap again. You know, because when we were at StemFuse, it was a lot different. I didn't really have the entrepreneurial itch. We were kind of cogs in a little bit bigger machine than what we were used to for the last few years, and we were ready to kind of take the leap and jump back into being full-time entrepreneurs again.
Yeah, well, you were the chief technology officer, you said, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you were just, like you said, you were one of the cogs in the machine. You had certain things that you had to fulfill, you had certain responsibilities, but it wasn't so much that you were taking the bull by the horns and leading the charge and now grabbing that again. And that's, I think that's something that sounds like it's in your nature to be somebody that provides that direction, and because you have that passion within you, and you need to bring people along, and you have that urge to teach.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was definitely one of the main reasons and one of the drivers for why we actually made that decision.
And I could see that there's a great unfulfilled pain point here that you were talking about, and I didn't realize that Learn, Create, Build Academy, it's not like a full-time kind of school, but it's more, you said, so it's summer camps, it's afternoons kind of thing. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so when we started in August, which if you think about a summer camp company, that's probably not the best time to start a new company, since August is the end of the summer. So we got really creative with what we wanted to do, because we don't want learning to be, or what we taught to be, you know, kind of just for summers. We knew it could be year round. So what we did and what we still do is we put on weekend events throughout the Midwest, teaching programming, game design, those technical skills that, you know, we had kind of really crafted when we were at StemFuse and kind of learned how to teach it, and we kind of took it and redeveloped a new curriculum and a new approach, and we teach it directly on the weekends. So, you know, for instance, last weekend I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, teaching one of these camps, and you know, we'll have another camp in Des Moines, Iowa. And it's all throughout the Midwest. And so we put on these camps where kids come for one day and they kind of get some of the basics down. They don't learn a lot in one day. You can't teach too much in a single day, but with the idea to kind of fuel that passion, so when summer comes around and we can give them longer opportunities to learn these skills, the kids and the parents want to really hop on these opportunities, and we can, you know, focus on getting kids, you know, not only to be introduced to technology, but hopefully fuel that passion, the passion that, you know, we all have for technology, kind of at an early age. So when they are starting to make decisions about colleges or careers, we can, you know, hopefully help, you know, kind of fill some of the technology needs that, you know, the United States or the world is kind of needing.
Well, yeah, I think that our industry right now is really taking off in popularity as something that you don't have to go to a four-year college to make 100K. Like, you could go and teach yourself. As long as you have that ability within yourself to be disciplined and learn something, put in the work and figure out what to do, have some social skills, you could do really well for yourself if you're an intelligent person. You don't have to put yourself in a world of debt to be able to be successful in something like this, if this is what you find inspiring and you find some passion about doing this. The development industry is amazing in so many different ways, and there's a spectrum of languages that you could learn and dive into, and it's a lot of fun.
There are so many niches. Yeah, there's so many niches that you can actually dig into and become successful at. It's really cool. I mean, they're just learning about the little nuances about, you know, so, you know, you do have like your camps, you know what I mean? Like your Adam camps, or you're like, you know, the people who do that. But like, realistically, like, there's so, I think it's honestly the broadest industry right now as far as opportunity and ambiguity. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's technology finds its way into almost everything now. So it's like, you can literally go anywhere with it. It's just, what do you want to do?
Yeah, I mean, you could teach a class on JavaScript. You could teach a class on NPM. There's so many different kind of ways that you could go. I mean, even if you didn't go development, you could do design things. Do you do any kind of UX or product design kind of path as well? Or is it more programming kind of lessons?
You know, asking myself personally, like, am I involved? Are you asking if I'm involved in UX and design? Is that the question?
No. I'm asking if Learn, Create, Build, if there's any kind of classes in that kind of field.
You know, to date, no, but we've only been around a year, so we're really still expanding what we're offering. We actually haven't even taught. Mainly right now, it's programming, it's game design. Those are our two big topics, I guess you could say. We've also done some animation, so 2D and 3D animation, because that's really what
goes along with the game design, right?
Right. Yep. Because that's really what kind of draws the interest of the kids. You know, if you tell a kid they're going to learn how to design something, and maybe it's a little less exciting to them than to say you're going to learn how to build a game. And so they see that they can learn how to build a game, and then hopefully as we're growing and as we can continue to offer some additional classes, we can get them into even more of the nuts and bolts, whether it's more of a UX, you know, or design path, whether it's more of a programming path. But we're still kind of only at the cursory or entry point of where we ultimately want to be, where we can take a kid and kind of give them that path from getting them introduced to it about, you know, based on something they're excited about, and then actually showing them a couple of the different routes they can take, and hoping to, you know, help develop those skills throughout, you know, over the course of a few years.
Are you doing any kind of testing as far as what people are interested, what people might want to be learning, what people are interested in learning, things like that? And I know it's very early, so I don't know if you're going to have numbers that equate to something valuable yet. I mean, that might be more like 2 to 3 years down the road to where you could have numbers that are actionable.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We have done, you know, a few things. We talked to our parents, you know, because we always say we have two customers, right? We have the kid has to come in, has to love the camp, so they want to come back, has to love the experience.
Yes.
But we also have the parent who's the one who's actually deciding to make the purchase decision, right? So they need to see that their child had fun, but they also need to see that the student actually learned something as well. So it's kind of a
you've got two pain points to get across. So one is the value proposition, and the other is the educational proposition.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, your kids are going to have fun here, and there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff to do, but it's a bit niche, you know, so at that. But I mean, it's a technology, so I used to do something very similar, but it was taking kids overseas, and so at that. So trying to convince parents, you know, that, you know, you're a young child, and these young adults are going to be fine overseas, and they're going to have fun, and they're going to come back with memories and not malaria. It can be pretty interesting, but it also can be like super fulfilling. I mean, especially when you deliver on that promise, you know, that you were able to make, when you actually get to see the kid actually having fun and learning something and taking it. I think it'll be interesting for you 5, 6, 7 years down the road if you guys keep doing it. And you see that first kid doing their own tutorials or doing their own, or pioneering their own thing. You know what I mean? It's going to be insane. Like, you're going to be like, whoa, dude, we did this. Like, this kid, you're going to be that kid's story. Your high school that wouldn't let you drop a class that led to an educational career, you're going to have that kid go, man, I really don't know if I was feeling it, and my parents pushed me into it, and then I had an amazing time one weekend, and now I'm the CEO of this tech company. It's like,
oh man, once you have that alumni list, that's going to be amazing. What a good feeling that will be on that day.
Yeah, that's, and you actually hit the nail right on the head, because one of the big things, the newest thing we're launching now, we've got through the first full year, is we're launching some online classes where we actually teach kids online. But it's not like your typical online learning where you give them 45 videos that are 20 hours in length and then expect a kid to watch it all, because, you know, that's hard for me even. And I think it's hard for a lot of people, but especially a kid at the age of, you know, 10 years old, 12 years old, 14 years old, to expect them to be able to hold themselves accountable, it's tough. So what we've done is we actually have live online classes that we teach. So the kids get in a chat, basically it's like a web online classroom. They see each other's faces via webcam, they talk through their microphones, you know, so they're doing it with a group of people. And so they're accountable to show up at a certain time to complete the assignments. And our first online class, which we actually just launched probably last Thursday, was the first official class, but we've ran a bunch of pilot programs throughout the summer, testing it out, making sure that it was feasible, the technology worked. But the first class is actually on teaching a child to build their own game, but then turning it into a mobile app that's actually going to end up on Google Play or possibly the Apple Store. So we take them through the whole process.
That's amazing.
And it goes right back to exactly what you're saying, that fulfillment of we want to help a kid actually get an app so they can go to their friend and say, well, download my app on your iPhone, or download your my app on your Android phone. So we take them
Imagine if that takes off. You just created a 7-year-old millionaire. I mean, how problematic could that be?
Yeah. Seven might be a little young. We do take, you know, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, and that's kind of where that's the entry point. Is kind of 8 to 14 is really our focus right now. But as we go, mm-hmm. you know, and as the students that we currently have continue to get older, we're going to expand into the high school level as well.
Yeah. Do you find that it's a, do you think it's a maturity and comprehension thing? Is that why you go in 8? I know in martial arts, when we teach, and so that we try not to go, well, at least in certain martial arts, we try not to go below 5, because it's just the comprehension level, or the be able to hold the attention span is really, even at 5, is almost not there.
Yeah, it's definitely that, and they have to have basic, you know, computer skills. So if they don't if they haven't had a lot of time to spend behind a computer, it's just very difficult. If they have trouble typing and using a mouse and a keyboard, it's going to be a lot more difficult for them. So once they've kind of get into the age where that is no longer kind of a big factor, then, you know, we can actually start teaching them some actual skills using the, you know, the knowledge that they have of how to work and use a computer.
Let me ask you a question, Shane. Do you ever entertain the thought of being acquired by a big LMS company? I know there's a few out there that, when we started talking about this, started popping in my head. I just wonder if anybody's approached you, or if that kind of came across in a conversation.
No, we've never been approached as of yet. We're still, you know, relatively small in the grand scheme of things. There are other companies doing similar things to what we're doing, so we're definitely not completely unique in that regard. That being said, mm-hmm. I'm definitely not to the point where I'd be interested in, you know, looking at selling the company now, because I feel like there's so much more that we still want to do, and we are, you know, we are growing. We do have some big visions that we really want to work on and really want to see come to fruition. But if the opportunity presented itself a few years down the road, and I thought it was at a point where I'd accomplished or I'd built a structure that was going to be able to keep going and keep growing and survive inside of another company, then yeah, I definitely would entertain the idea. But I think we're still a long ways out from that ever being something
we'd... You can't jump out of the car in the middle of the interstate. I totally get that and could appreciate that, because you have a long road ahead that I'm sure you want to see your way to the end of.
Yeah, definitely.
Let me ask you about something a little different, Shane. Are you still doing Code Karate?
Yes and no. Yes, that I'm still doing it and that it's still out there, it still exists, but I have been kind of on a 1-year hiatus from actively putting out content. And there's actually some pretty good reasons for that. But that being said, I am kind of at the point where in the next 2-3 months you're going to start probably seeing quite a bit more content to put out there.
Okay, because, you know, when I look at the site, it looks like it's still active. Like, you guys still sell products. You have the Learn Drupal in 30 Days, the Drupal Commerce courses, 5 Secrets to Becoming a Drupal 7 Ninja. So I wasn't sure if these are things that you guys are still kind of supporting, still actively putting content out there, but it sounds like you said, when are you going to start putting content out again?
I was going to say, mainly the reason was, you know, if you're familiar with the Drupal world at all, you know, the last year, the last 12 to 14 months has really been about transitioning towards Drupal 8. And all of my content to date has all been Drupal 7, so I kind of got to the point where it was a good time to stop putting out a bunch of new Drupal 7 content as we were starting to get into the transition. But I also never had the time with, you know, starting this new company, growing it, to spend the time to really get behind Drupal 8 as of yet. And that started to kind of switch a little bit. I've had more time to really focus on what Drupal 8 is, the changes. And so that's where now in the future, the next 2-3 months, once I really start to get a handle on Drupal 8, you're going to start seeing some additional content on Code Karate specific to Drupal 8.
Well, I think there's something to be said about not being the guinea pig. I mean, it hasn't, to be fair, it's not like it's been out forever. It's just a short amount of time. So I think now's the time to make the great migration to D8 for a lot of people. But also, too, if you're putting out your own work, you might go Drupal 8-wise. You know, if you're a freelancer, you maybe not go Drupal 8. You might go D7 because you know all the things are there. You are very familiar with all the technology already. Everything's trusted and tested. You're definitely going to be able to get your project out, and you know it's going to be successful. Whereas if you're a freelancer and you jump into D8, you might not know everything. Things might work a little bit differently. I don't know. It might take a little bit longer to get your project executed. So, but I imagine people are looking at you guys because you're one of the sources that people look at for Drupal advice. So it's good to hear that you have some videos coming out soon.
Yeah. So they should, like I said, should be in the works. Hopefully in the next couple months, I'll have time to really get them put together. I've kind of been thinking about the whole strategy of the site and the way that it's developed over, because I started it back in 2011 when I was doing web development, you know, at Beginner Media, and I kind of kept it going throughout my days at StemFuse because I've, you know, always spent so much time in Drupal. And it's one of those things that, you know, as Drupal's kind of evolved from Drupal 7 to Drupal 8, I know that I've felt the learning curve just in the last month or so when I've really started spending time in Drupal 8, and I know that there's going to be, you know, thousands and thousands of other people that are going to have the same struggles that I have.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of quote-unquote opportunities out there for people to learn, people to help people learn. It's not the easiest thing if you're used to the way everything was done in D7. But I mean, it's not like D8's a giant leap ahead as far as the learning curve. You're going to be able to, you know how to use views. You're going to be able to create fields the way you normally created fields. It's not that big of a jump. But I'm sure there's, when you come to the realm of optimization, I'm sure there's a lot of secrets that maybe aren't as apparent to someone when you first jump into a project.
Yeah, my first impressions of it definitely were that from a site builder's perspective, if you're the ones, you know, configuring views, configuring the fields, you're not going to notice too much difference. You're going to be able to jump in and be pretty effective right away. It's when you get to the point of you're trying to do something that you can't quite do without typing in some code. That's when you're going to have to sit back and actually, you know, take a little bit of broader look at how the whole system works, how things play together, because now it's built on the Symfony framework. It's a little bit more object oriented, not completely yet, but it's definitely much better than it ever has been in the past. So you definitely have to take a different approach. You can't just jump in and throw a quick module together quite as fast as you used to. It's still not too complicated, but there's definitely some tricks when you're starting to kind of dig into things.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting into the D8 world. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, to be honest, it's always fun to see when they open up a new version of a similar technology, even with something as simple as like Word or, you know, Excel. You're always looking for something, you know. Yeah. How do they change it? How do they screw up where your favorite stuff was? You know, like, I hate it because it's new, and then eventually it becomes a part of your life. But Shane, as we bring this thing to a bit of a close, I always have two questions that I like to ask. The first being, you know, because we're all different individuals and we all recharge differently, and some people out there somewhere maybe not know, you know, don't know how to shut it off. So how do you shut off? How do you recharge the batteries? How do you keep the entrepreneurial juices flowing?
That's a good question, and it's not always easy to do. But some of the ways that I do it, I try to do quite a bit of reading. So I read on, you know, new technologies, but I also read on business and entrepreneurial type books. But on top of that, I play a lot of guitar. So I spend a lot of time playing guitar when I need to recharge the batteries, and that's usually what does the trick best for me.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, most of us who create to unwind oftentimes just create in a different medium, and that's the thing that recharges our batteries. That's pretty interesting. And so you don't always have to shut off, you just sometimes have to like paint with a different brush or paint with oils.
Yeah, yeah,
or,
I like
our musical notes.
Yeah, exactly. And then my second question, my favorite question, it has to do with selfishness. I love selfishness. I think if more people were a little bit more honest about their selfishness, they'd the world would be a much more honest place. But what is, in this moment, your most selfish desire? Nothing in the way, no borders, no anything. If you could have it, it could happen. Situational, item, anything.
Yeah, so that's a great question, and yeah, I'm definitely never opposed to. It's funny. I'm often will tell people that I'm maybe a little more selfish than I should be at times. So it's a great question. I guess what I would be most, or what I would try to want to do most, if I could have one thing, selfishness put aside, would be to build a multi-million-dollar company, build, learn, create, build into something that people know what it is, know what it means, know what it stands for, but to then, not, of course, on top of that success, make a difference in, the lives of thousands of these kids to who, maybe someday are going to be the, someone who helps perfect the self-driving car, even though, some, you could argue it's getting close, or put someone on Mars. Like, these kids are the ones that are going to change the world in the next generation. So, do good, do well. I guess that's what I would do. Selfishness put aside.
No, it's fair. That's my thing. I'm a huge proprietor of artists and people who make art and people who make handmade goods. So I recently got an investor to angel investor to invest in my business, and that's my selfish hope too. I want it to explode. I want it to be, if I have to, I want to get as known and as popular as I possibly can, because that draws business to the side. I want money going back into these artists' hands. I want them to be able to, take that vacation or go and do that thing. And yeah, there's money in it, obviously. So that's what makes it selfish. You want to be successful. But in the same flip of the coin, I want that money because I know I will be a good steward of that desire. Like, I will take that money and I will put it back in artists' hands. I will do things for artists that other people wouldn't do or haven't done yet. So I get that completely. It's like there's something to be found in selfishness. There's always some sort of, not always, but there can be some beautiful selflessness and selfishness, I think.
Well, the value of your time.
Yeah, I think so. It's just the arrogant belief that you can do better with money than other people can. like my vision, man. I just want to see it through, and everybody's gonna benefit from it. It's like a small dictatorship. But Shane, thanks so much for coming on. We really enjoyed having you on, and you brought a pretty cool perspective and a interesting story that I don't think we've heard before. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I appreciate being asked to be on. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be the last time.
Cool. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
let me know.
Thank you so much, Shane.
Yeah, thank you guys.
If you have a question or topic you'd like us to discuss, send us your text or audio questions at connect@thundernerdsho.com.
Also, hit us up if you're interested in sponsoring the show, and don't forget to pimp us on iTunes with a like or review.
I like romance novels. They have happy endings.